Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on today's program, take a look at some of the headlines. A lot going on, a lot to look at today. And also the topic of cause and effect. Lots of problems in the world and lots of effects trying to be dealt with. But in a lot of cases, that causes more problems. It's a really interesting topic to take a look at. Cause and effect. We have to get to the bottom of the problems, the sources to solve them. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're on 101.3 KPCG and online. You can listen at kpcg.fm. Also, thetrumpet.com has a live link there too. If you go to the website and look over to the right side, you can click the Listen Live tab and listen in. This is Trumpet Radio Live on Thursday. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. And as you heard there on the headlines, the hurricane is just going crazy. Hurricane Irma and wiped out some islands pretty substantially on its way to Florida over the weekend. So that's what we're all keeping our eyes on.
It looked like 8 were killed on St. Martin. I guess that's one of the islands down there. As far as I had last heard, it was 8 so far. So hopefully it doesn't get more than that. But I would think on those islands, they're especially vulnerable and the death count could only rise.
Yeah, if people are looking at the photos of the destruction, of course there's some video too, but the photos are really eerie. Boats all turned upside down in different harbors. One really strange picture showed a whole row of roofs, and it was odd to look at it because I thought, what happened? Did the homes get crushed? But as it explained, the roofs got picked up off the buildings, moved, and then set down. So it kind of looks like the houses should be there, but they're just gone. So it kind of, because it kind of stacked them in a row almost. So just terrible destruction there. Category 5 hurricane, 180 some mile an hour winds, and especially in some of those islands. I don't know, you know, if they're what the construction is like on some of those buildings, but there's some video too of people walking around looking at the after effects. And those islands have been decimated. And I think, yeah, the last I heard, there was about 10 or so dead, but stay tuned, right? And then there's another one coming behind it, which isn't quite as strong, but still might hit some of those islands again on, like, Saturday. So I guess that's the price you pay living in a beautiful island. It's nice most of the time, but then you got hurricanes.
Yeah, it's really sad to think about just the fact that some people probably moved down there to avoid a lot of the other problems in the rest of the country or in other places, and yet they still get hit too. It's like you can't move anywhere to avoid those things, and then you see the pictures and it's made more real by those visuals, because otherwise you just hear the number. It does help to see exactly what's going on.
Really bad situation there. It's talked about somewhat on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Richard Palmer coming to you from Edstone, England. Make sure you listen for that show in a little bit here on KPCG. And of course, the archives are online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com as well. Some of the headlines here about Hurricane Irma. This is from the Daily Mail. Monster Hurricane Irma started hammering Puerto Rico with 185-mile-per-hour winds and heavy rain late last night. The Category 5 storm reduced Caribbean islands of Barbuda and St. Martin to rubble with deadly destruction. Roughly 95% of homes and properties were destroyed on both islands, and some being barely habitable now. At least 8 people died on the French part of St. Martin, while a 2-year-old child was killed in one of the other islands. Some 900,000 people are without power on Puerto Rico, and at least 50,000 people are without water, which is always so strange because there's water everywhere, but yeah, of course not clean water. Irma was following projected path that would see it hit Dominican Republic, and a few other islands, including Haiti today. The hurricane is expected to continue past eastern Cuba before veering north for Florida at the weekend. Red Cross said it is preparing for a major humanitarian response, as UN estimated 49 million will be affected. Mandatory evacuations were ordered in the Florida Keys and parts of Miami as the scale of the storm emerged. So they're still looking to see what track it's going to take, and knowing that they're going to have to help quite a few people. But don't forget about Houston. They still have huge, huge recovery efforts going on, too. So they've kind of dropped out of the main headlines as people look at Florida, but they're still going through a disaster there in the Houston area.
Great point. It is easy to just move on from disasters when another disaster strikes, and yet the reality is so much of Texas has already been wiped out, and it's going to take many years to rebuild all of that as well. So there are more than one disaster taking place at one time, and that's just it's hard. I guess it's probably really hard for the government to deal with, because FEMA said it's many years behind as it is, and now it's been hit by a couple of hurricanes.
Yeah, that's what I had thought about when FEMA was talking about their the fact that they would have to be in Houston for years, because you can't wait years. I mean, I know maybe they could keep some people there and move some to other areas, but getting to be pretty serious. There's a little write-up here from the Miami Herald talking about what track is Irma going to take. They're still not totally sure. It says if Irma hits South Florida, it could deliver the first widespread damage to the region since Hurricane Wilma in 2005. Hermine ended the state's 10-year streak without a hurricane last year, but it landed far to the north in the state's Big Bend. Matthew came closer, raking the coast as it rolled north, but most damage occurred north of Daytona Beach. Wednesday morning's track shift to the right could be bad news for South Florida's densely developed east coast, or good news depending on how far it moves. But with hurricane force winds extending 50 miles from the storm's center, its path is too close to call for most people. So some are getting out while they can, and that's getting harder to do because the traffic jams and so forth. And, of course, people get pretty antsy, as I think we'd understand. There's a story about people getting into a fight over plywood, I think at Lowe's, and it turned kind of ugly. Supplies are being bought up every which way, so those are just some of the other things you have to deal with in preparation for a potential hurricane.
Yeah, and you said the winds are extending out as far as 50 miles from the center, so that if you can just imagine a 100-mile-wide swath of destruction wherever that thing decides to go. It's hard to even picture something like that, because that's tremendously huge. That's something that's really even hard to visualize, because 100 miles wide, I mean, that's going to cover pretty much everything. I mean, everything that you can think of.
Yeah, I was trying to think from Oklahoma City, 100 miles out would be where. I mean, there's not a lot outside of Oklahoma City, but it would hit Tulsa and Oklahoma City at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they're not 100 miles. It's only probably, I don't know, 75-ish, 80-ish.
Yeah, it's close to 100.
Is it? Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark. So, yeah, so that's amazing to think of a storm being that big coming in and doing damage at one time. So, anyway, hopefully people are getting a little, getting prepared as much as they can. They probably are looking at the Houston situation and realizing that they have to take it seriously before they get trapped.
Probably a lot more people are evacuating this time, learning the lesson from the one that just took place, where people who even thought they were in safe areas actually ended up getting impacted by it as well, partially because of the rain. But even in this case, the wind is so powerful, who knows exactly what could be damaged in this.
There's always some people that don't want to move. I saw an interview or a little, it wasn't really an interview, I guess it was a quick soundbite from a guy as part of this hurricane story. And him and his son were in their car and they were interviewing them. And the guy said, the captain has to stay with the ship. So he wasn't leaving. He looked like kind of a rough dude too. But I thought, well, yeah, unless you actually have a ship, I don't know that applies. But he was going to stick it out. And I think, if I understood the location correctly, I think he was down in the Florida Keys somewhere, which is not a good place to be.
Oh,
but
no.
Some people stay put.
Yeah, that's a tough decision to make. And obviously, the logistics come into play there, because people have to think about the cost of moving somewhere else. In case it, what if your house is never even touched by it and you went and stayed in a hotel for a couple of weeks? It would just be a very expensive a couple of weeks for most people. People probably couldn't afford that in most cases.
Yeah, and sometimes I think with the Houston situation, some of the hotels are being paid for by the government to help people out. But again, that only goes on for so long, I'm sure. And you've got to find some other place to be. And I don't know, living in a hotel is not ideal. You know, not bad to visit, but you don't want to live there long term. So, and that, I guess that's probably the thing that people do think about when it comes to leaving is, well, I've left before and it's been fine. You know, there was no damage. I could have stayed home. So people are always trying to weigh those things. But whenever it hits and it's really, really serious, then there's nothing people can do about it. And they wish they had gotten out. So we're going to, of course, keep watching that over the weekend. I guess it's supposed to hit Florida late Saturday night, early Sunday, if things continue to go as it looks like they're going now. So there'll be a lot more about that. And Richard Palmer talked some about it on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, among a few other topics, and had some good sound bites from some of those areas as well. Also, make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. The top story is, will nuclear North Korea force South Korea to oust the U.S.? North Korea always gets upset when the U.S. and South Korea have their military drills and so forth. Now, this is by Jeremiah Jacques. The crisis on the Korean Peninsula could change the global power balance. And so China's been really busy over in that area, of course, in the South China Sea and other places, extending their influence and their power. And the U.S. has been a little shakier as far as who we stand up for these days. And so it'll be interesting to see what some of those nations do, if they go more towards China or stay with the U.S. alliance.
It would be hard to see North Korea kicking the U.S. or basically forcing South Korea to kick the U.S. out, because wouldn't that mean that South Korea has less protection when North Korea actually strikes? And it's almost a certainty that they're going to strike South Korea at some point. It's like they threaten it every single day. They have missiles that reach far beyond that area. I don't know why South Korea would ever want to get rid of the U.S. there.
Yeah, unless they feel like China could give them a better hand. I don't know. I always think of those North and South Korea as kind of like the kids and China being like the dad.
True.
And the kids are always fighting, and the dad's like, all right, guys.
China clearly is tacitly supporting North Korea, though. So if you're South Korea, you would think, well, they're more on North Korea's side than ours, and we don't want to take a chance with China giving them even more favors with the U.S. gone.
Yeah, China would, I'm sure, be happy to take over both and say, yeah, all right, and we'll sort the situation out. But you can read that there at thetrumpet.com. Yeah, while we're the U.S. is just so focused on these hurricanes, which, of course, makes sense, North Korea's over there, you know, launching or blowing up their atomic bombs and shooting missiles and all kinds of things. So they're not settling down. They're not giving us a break. They're not giving us a hurricane holiday from their destruction. So much happening over there. Related to that, does Bible prophecy say North Korea could trigger World War III? Also by Jeremiah Jacques. He keeps an eye on that region there for thetrumpet.com. So make sure that you do stop and check out those top stories today. They're at thetrumpet.com. Here is a, what I might mention to you as well, just while we're talking about the hurricanes there, at the as we were mentioning, make sure you do get that free booklet, Why Natural Disasters. It's been talked about a fair number of times here on KPCG because of obviously all the natural disasters we see. And so make sure you do stop and get that book. It's a freebie. You can get it at thetrumpet.com. Read it right there on the website if you want to, or download it or have it sent to you. So great thing to look at there, Why Natural Disasters. Here is a note that I think people will find somewhat interesting. It's from Fox News. A letter was sent home by a first grade teacher at a grade school in Indiana, and it's causing quite a stir. Of course, it's the beginning of the school year, so you get a lot of notes from the teacher telling you different things. And this one's about religion. And the lady writes, I have had a group of about 5 students using the words God, Jesus, and devil in conversation. I can't imagine what those conversations would be, but that's what they were doing. She said, with this elementary being a public school, we have many different religions and beliefs, and I do not want to upset a child/parent because of these words being used. She said, if you go to church or discuss these things at home, Please have a talk with your child about there being an appropriate time and place of talking about it. So on one hand, I can appreciate the fact the teacher doesn't want to get in trouble. I'm sure all it would have to take is one person raising an issue and she'd be in difficulty. But at the same time, they're more than happy to teach evolution, immorality, etc. Isn't there a time and place for that as well? maybe it shouldn't be taught in schools. I think that's the ironic thing about it. Don't bring up religion, which, okay, I can understand that in a public school, but they're more than happy to push their ideology on the same kids.
Yeah, you could definitely understand why maybe kids who are in first grade shouldn't be having unsupervised discussions about God, Christ, and the devil all the time. But also, teachers are no more qualified to talk about evolution because evolution is false in every way, and the facts have proven that repeatedly. Yet they still continue to teach it as if it's true. They continue to put in examples from science that have been debunked decades ago as supposed proof for that supposed theory, which is really even too much of a high praise for that hypothesis, really. So you have to think of it in both situations there. Evolution is really just as ridiculous as first graders talking about God unsupervised. You're not going to get any further in either one of those discussions.
Well, and that's right. They don't look at evolution or some of these other ideas as a religion, but they really are. I mean, it is a faith because you can't prove it. And some would disagree with that, but, you know, everyone's waiting for the great evidence. And so that's just the irony of the whole situation to me, is that there are some pretty serious things being taught to children that parents in no way would want their kids hearing about. And so, you know, you could understand if the parent wanted to send a letter back and saying, okay, fine, but how about you don't teach this, this, and this unsupervised to my kids when I'm not there? So it's an interesting debate that goes back and forth, and I can understand, again, why they wouldn't want to be getting into a lot of religious discussion, but they feel free to teach some other things that are very anti-religion as well. So, again, that's the world we live in, a lot of division there on what to teach kids in school.
Yeah, and it's not even so much that evolution is taught, but just the way it is so dogmatically asserted, like it is absolute truth, which even most of those teachers probably don't even believe in a such thing as absolute truth, except when it comes to their religion of evolution. They think that that is absolutely true, and yet you ask any one of them where the universe came from, how did it actually start, none of them could ever tell you. They say it exploded from a particle, and yet life has to come from life. I mean, it's so easy to dismantle that supposed theory that maybe they should teach it as a belief that people have, but not as a fact, because it isn't a fact at all.
Yeah, very interesting situation. There's a really good Key of David program about evolution and being a Christian, and you can find that online at thetrumpet.com. And that's just from a few weeks ago. That was a personal appearance campaign in Chicago. So if you haven't seen that yet, make sure that you do. It was interesting that whenever you put a program or something on the internet, it makes the rounds. You know, somebody sees it and they share it with somebody else. And that program, that Key of David program on the topic of evolution, was shared with some, I don't know, apparently the chat room or blog looks sort of like a place that scientists would frequent. And surprisingly, they did not agree with the biblical-based teaching that God created things. So you're always going to have some naysayers.
And I believe you were telling me before when you mentioned that off the air that they were pretty insulting, but they never actually tried to address any of the specific claims. Isn't that typical? That's how it always happens. They try to direct insults at people they disagree with instead of ever trying to prove the other person's point wrong. Why won't they prove the other person's point wrong if they're so sure they're right?
Yeah, that's but you know, a lot of people, their whole, especially if they're in the scientific community, their whole career, their whole you know, status is built up on this false premise, and so it's hard to get rid of that when or look at it objectively, even when it would do that person no personal good in their eyes anyway to look at the facts of the case. So you're not going to get a fair and balanced view. I guess I stole that from Fox News, but you're not going to get an honest evaluation. They have too much on the line to really look at it honestly.
Well, that's true. They're heavily subsidized whenever they claim that they believe evolution. Even if maybe deep down they have some questions about it, if they act like they're totally sure about it and they put out studies that are favorable toward evolution, they get a lot more money from that. It's much more lucrative. And I mean, really what it gets down to is rebellion. It gets down to people not wanting to believe there is a supreme authority who has laws that we have to follow. That's just really why so many people choose evolution when, if we're honest about it, people have not taken 5 minutes to prove it either way, whether it's evolution or it's God, it's one or the other. But because they don't want to obey anybody, you might as well just choose evolution in that case.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I don't think on a lot of really serious topics, many people have really proved it out one way or the other. It's easy to just go along with whatever the common teaching is, go with the flow. And that's what happens a lot of times. Here's an interesting note, historical note. 70 AD might be a date that rings in people's minds for the destruction of Jerusalem. And there's a few interesting things that happened, and one of them was on today, on September the 7th. Make sure that it is the 7th today. It is, yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure it was, but you know, you never know. We missed work on Monday, so sometimes you get discombobulated.
I thought it was the 6th for a second. I'm kind of thrown off as well.
It is the 7th. That's what my calendar says on my Mac, and it does not lie. 31st of May is in AD 70 is when Rome captured the first wall of the city of Jerusalem. June the 5th, Titus and his Roman legions breached the middle wall of Jerusalem, all part of this attack. July the 1st, Roman general Titus and his forces set up battering rams to assault the walls of Jerusalem. August 8th, the Tower of Antonia destroyed by Romans. August 10th, the Second Temple in Jerusalem was set on fire by a Roman army under Titus during the capture of the city, approximately, they say. And then September 7th, today, the Roman army under General Titus occupies and plunders Jerusalem. And then the 27th, 20 days from now, the walls of upper city of Jerusalem battered down by the Roman army. So they were really, really attacked and plundered and destroyed there, 70 AD. And on this day, the Roman army under General Titus occupies and plunders Jerusalem. So pretty interesting historical note.
That destruction has even been called the 70 AD Holocaust, and it's a type of the coming Great Tribulation that's almost going to destroy the entire earth. That just gives you an idea of how brutal it was back then in 70 AD with the Romans and just the way that they besieged the city and people were starving to death. And then, of course, they came in and murdered everyone and burned everything to the ground and took everything of value out of there. It was just a complete annihilation and only a type, a very small type of what's about to come on the scene.
Yeah, there's some really interesting first-hand accounts, eyewitness accounts from Josephus, who was there at the time, and he talks about how when they burned that the temple there, it was like the whole area was on fire, like the hills were molten, and there was blood everywhere, and bodies, and there were so many bodies that the Roman soldiers had to climb over hills of bodies to chase down the people that were still alive. So very graphic images, but that's the reality of war at that time. The one other note here, or quote from Josephus. It's interesting when you think about that area today. You think about kind of deserty, and you know it's not lush, at least not where unless they really irrigate it. But Josephus says this: truly, the very view itself was a melancholy thing. For those places which were adorned with trees and pleasant gardens were now become desolate country every way, and its trees were all cut down. Nor could any foreigner that had formerly seen Judea and the most beautiful suburbs of the city and now saw it as a desert, but lament and mourn sadly at so great a change. For the war had laid all signs of beauty quite waste, nor had anyone who had known the place before, had come on a sudden to it now, would have known it again. But though he, a foreigner, were at the city itself, yet would he have inquired for it? So you get there and you say, well, where is Jerusalem? Oh. That's how bad it was.
Right, and it is easy to think of the entire Middle East region as just desert, but it used to be some of the most lush land in the entire world. Destruction like that changes it, and of course, certain farming practices can mess things up as well. But whenever you walk up on a city and you don't even recognize that it used to be there, that was actually prophesied as well by Christ. He said that there would not be one stone left on top of another. Yet today we still see people worshiping at the Temple Mount and the Wailing Wall like it is the original temple when that was totally flattened.
Yeah, it was plowed like a field. And yeah, it's interesting when many of us, most of us, I think, have not been in a war situation, thankfully, but or even those that have, probably not a situation where things were completely desolated like this. But there's a lot of examples in World War II when the Russians and the Chinese and all of them together came and got into eastern Germany and really destroyed that area. I was reading some eyewitness accounts of that from a German family that lived there at the time, and they took everything was gone because they had lived on a nice farm in the middle of a forest. The forest was gone when they were done. There were no trees. There was no vegetation. It was just gone. And so it's interesting to think about that when a massive armed force comes in, like here in AD 70 in Jerusalem, the landscape changes. They just cut down all the trees. Everything's gone, and you wouldn't even recognize it. That's a part, and that's before the weaponry of today.
That's a good look at the Gentile mindset as well, that you just have to completely raise everything. You completely mow it down. It's almost like we're not even just looking to wipe you out for the present time, but try to make sure that you never rise up again. That's really the mindset of a lot of these powers. They spare no prisoners, literally, and they just completely wipe out everything in sight.
Yeah, and there's of course prophecies that talk about the before and after with some of those armies. You know, it's a beautiful before and it's a desert afterwards, because that happens. You can look historically and see where that's happened. These huge forces come through and there's nothing behind them when they're done. It's just astounding to realize that. So some of the historical notes, I was on 70 AD. Today, Roman army under General Titus occupies and plunders Jerusalem. And of course, when that other eyewitness accounts say that when that second temple burned there, a lot of the Jews stopped worrying about their own lives and went and tried to save the temple because that meant so much to them, and they were not successful in saving their lives or the temple because it burned.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was a horrible situation there, and the temple was completely burned, and actually the dig that we're a part of, the archaeological excavation over there that the Herbert W. Armstrong College is a part of, actually is figuring out that the Temple Mount is not where that temple was. In fact, that Wailing Wall is just like part of a Roman fort. If people knew that, they wouldn't want to be worshiping there.
Yeah, they're fighting over it, but they don't really know what they're fighting over in a lot of cases. So pretty interesting. There's a new Key of David program. It's not this weekend, but it'll be the following that talks a little bit about that dig as well. And some of those things. So that'll be coming your way here in a week or so.
That actually would solve a lot of conflict, wouldn't it? If everyone knew that that was just a Roman fort, then they'd be like, okay, all the Muslims can have it then. We'll back off of that because it has no significance to us anymore.
Yeah, sure. It's yours. Other than it would be the high ground, I guess, and you don't want to give that up.
That's true.
In a battle.
Getting sniped.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's the military side of it as well. But yeah, that's... a lot of controversy and fighting over there. There always is, and people are always over there putting their little notes in the wall, their prayer notes, I guess. Does somebody come take those out of there? They leave them.
I don't know. It just shows you how old that wall is, though, for there to be so many holes in it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's always something going on there. We want to take a look today at a really interesting topic, the topic of cause and effect. That's something that we don't probably think about quite enough, especially in the West, I guess. Lots of problems, lots of difficulties, and so all kinds of industries are built up just on trying to deal with the cause of certain problems and not dealing with the effect. And we want to talk about this because we were looking at this coworker letter that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote on December 16th, 1984. Some people might remember receiving that. And he writes this. It is Sunday morning. I was especially impressed by two TV programs this morning. One showed a television evangelist in a camp of emaciated, starving, and dying children and adults in Ethiopia. The evangelist and a doctor were working over dying people. Victims were dying almost by the minute. Many were without any clothing. The doctor was telling of the need for blankets to spread over the starving people. It was a sickening, revolting scene, almost turning the viewers' stomachs inside out. The purpose was an emotional appeal for donations. And for those of us that lived in the 80s, that was a huge thing. They had the UNICEF program and other things where they'd get people to send in money. I don't know if they still do that, but that was a really big push in the 80s because of all the famines going on in Ethiopia.
Yeah, and even today we can relate to that because every radio station you tune to or every TV channel that you turn on has like the Harvey Relief Fund number at the bottom of it so that people will hopefully be donating. And it's always mentioned on TV and every broadcast you listen to. It's always part of the discussion constantly after a disaster. Well, we need to donate $10 to this, and you know, every $10 goes a long way.
Yeah, and that's we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on because you have more and more disasters, and there's more people could donate to. I mean, there's no end to it. You know, I mean, when's the last time we've heard about Syria or some of those places? Mm-hmm. They have problems too. Mr. Armstrong continues. He says, the other TV program also began with pictures of starving children living in many parts of Asia and Africa, illiterate, living in abject poverty, filth, and squalor. But then the program switched to the rich countries, civilized, educated, with large middle classes. But there it showed spiritual sickness, starvation, and depravity, victims of excess alcohol, drugs, illicit sex, and rampant crime and violence. It explained the cause of all this physical and moral and spiritual sickness and the universal unhappiness and hopelessness in Satan's world. And he says it's a matter of cause and effect. Are we going to be dealing with the effects of things, which there's a lot of effects, or is it better to go back and find out what the actual cause of the problem is and solve the cause?
Cause and effect is really an important mindset to have just in everyday life, and it does. Sometimes it takes some thought. You know, if someone is sick and then gets better, you're like, oh, well, I must have treated the issue that was there. But really, the effect is the sickness. The cause is whatever was done to cause the sickness in the first place. You have to really get back to the root of it every time. It's, you know, whenever we're so worried about nuclear weapons today, we're trying to stop the weapons from being launched. Really, what we should have done was stop people from making them in the first place. That would have been What is the cause? What is in man's mind that actually makes him want to produce weapons that could wipe out all life? We're trying to deal with the effect now and hopefully tiptoe around these weapons being launched. That's the effect, because the weapons are already built. We haven't really solved the heart of the issue.
Right. A couple other points here that Mr. Armstrong brings out. He says the problems that we see are all caused by the way humanity has been living these 6,000 years since Adam's creation. The program first mentioned above sought to deal with the effect, and talking about the famine and so forth. He says, just physically feeding the illiterate, poor, and hungry does not eliminate the wretched condition, but rather perpetuates it. As Jesus said, the poor you always have with you and always will if we do not correct the cause of the evil. And so while it is nice to try to help a group in a time of need, if they don't have a way out of their situation, that need just continues, and you just have to continue to take care of them. And so cause and effect, we can think about it in a few areas. The Houston hurricane relief, like you mentioned, I'm sure there'll be one for Irma coming up. Taking in refugees from war, sometimes we do that in the U.S., other things. And a big one, a really big one that affects everybody or many people is the medical profession, offering medicine for diseases. You have a disease, we've got a pill for that. You're hooked on the pill, we've got another pill for that. So we're going to take a look at that area in particular, the cause and effect. Lots of illness today, lots of medication, lots of medical treatments, and more sick people all the time. We're dealing with the effect, and we're not dealing with the cause of these problems.
This is an area where considering the cause would actually be beneficial in so many ways, because we're spending just billions of dollars on medicine every year, and that's treating the effect when, you know, the average person is on a couple dozen medications in this country. those things are not really fixing anything, because at the same time, we see the obesity rate go up. We see the heart disease, heart failure rates go up. People are getting more and more sick, dying earlier. And, you know, even if people don't die earlier, it's like they've been having their lives prolonged through unnatural means, and it's a miserable existence. The health is not improving as we come up with more medicine. So there has to be something more to it. There has to be a way that we can prevent getting sick in the first place so that we don't get hooked on all these different drugs.
Yeah, the drug issue, and we're talking about prescription drugs, but it is a big issue in the United States and maybe some of the other Western nations as well. And that is something, too, to even think about in terms of, say, the Houston situation. People have to leave their homes. They have medications they need. And even if you look at the illegal drug side of it, there's a whole write-up about that as well that I saw recently, where some people wouldn't leave even knowing the hurricanes were coming because they didn't want to leave their drugs behind. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty severe situation. But example of prescription drugs in the U.S. is a really interesting one. People, of course, are dealing with physical and mental illness. It seems like a lot more. All of which, when you get down to it, is caused by broken law on some level. It doesn't mean that the person individually broke all kinds of laws. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But if you look at the food production in the U.S., that whole industry is breaking laws every which way, God's laws. And so we are what we eat, and we're eating these diseases. And a lot of times people don't know, they don't realize what they're eating, but the companies are happy to sell you some really, really nutritionally deficient foods. And then lo and behold, we have chronic diseases just sweeping the nation.
Health problems are always somebody's fault, whether it is food production or even sometimes diseases pass around like a plague in certain places because we don't follow the biblical instruction of quarantine, isolating ourselves when we're sick until we're better. And anytime something like that happens, maybe it's not the exact person's fault who was sick at the time, but someone always caused it. There's always a broken physical law that leads to that sickness.
Yeah, the solution to any problem, in this case a health problem, is to go back to the law. And then, of course, there's healing too, which is another topic you can look at. But getting back to the health laws, at least we'll get people on the right track. It would fix the cause of the problem, but we don't see that happening. There's too much money involved in the way food's produced. There's too much money involved in the medical industry. Man's dealing with the effect and doing so with prescription drugs. The Wall Street Journal reports that prescription drug spending in the U.S. ballooned last year to nearly $374 billion, which was not only a hefty 13.1% increase in growth, but also represented the highest level of spending since 2001, according to a new report from the Institute of Healthcare Informatics. So $374 billion spent in the U.S. just on prescription drugs last year.
And why would anyone ever want to actually cure a disease if it means that you don't make as much money? If the disease is gone, you're not selling the drugs that would supposedly help you with those diseases. People, of course, I think a lot of people are idealistic and they want to see others do better in life and feel better. But when that much money is on the line, do you really think that people's desire for other people's well-being is stronger than their desire for all that money?
It's a very lucrative industry, to say the least. When you look at medical in general, PBS NewsHour reported that the individual in the U.S. per person spends $10,345 per year on health care. That's the average. So some people aren't spending anything. Some people are spending a lot more. That's the average. And that's a new peak. That's the first time it's been over $10,000. Of the total $3.35 trillion spending projected this year, hospital care accounts for the largest share, about 32%. Doctors and other clinicians account for nearly 20%. Prescription drugs bought through pharmacies account for about 10%. And so that is the cost for medical in general. And then, of course, the prescription drugs are in that as well. $3.35 trillion breaks down to over $10,000 per person in the United States. It's and by the way, of course, reports show that it's going to increase and increase and increase. You know, and that's that. I think anyone could look at that and say, well, we're not solving the root of the problem. That's for sure.
See, another benefit of examining the cause is that we would save ourselves close to $10,000 or over $10,000 a year on average. It really is something that if we just ate right and we slept enough and we got that exercise, obviously some of us have genetic issues or things that are hereditary, but there are still ways by just living right and following certain health laws where we wouldn't have to get on a couple dozen medications per person in this country. That just isn't the right way of dealing with things. Those are just pills. They're pills that are made out to be magical, like they can heal all our ailments, and yet each one has 50 side effects, and yet we're paying over $10,000 a year for all those pills. Where does it end? When do we ever stop paying for it? If these pills are truly working, at some point, none of us should have to be paying money for them anymore.
Yeah, it's always funny if you kind of flip the numbers the other way. And if you went to somebody and said, hey, look, if you follow these laws that we're going to lay out here, we'll give you $10,000 this year, like every year. I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that? At least give it a try. I mean, maybe we'd falter, but I mean, you'd say, well, I'll give it a shot at least. Because that's some good money. But that's what's being spent per person because of some of these terrible illnesses that are out there. The Trumpet Hour program from Wednesday this week, make sure you listen for that. There was a segment on there about the chronic diseases that are coming around. And that's what we see today. We don't see as much of, say, the the plagues of the past, but we do see chronic diseases creeping up. And it has a great cost, whether it's the health of the person or the money that they're losing. So the problems continue to get worse and worse and worse, and the more solutions that they try to bring forward to deal with the effects, the more problems spring forward. And it's just a never-ending cycle unless you solve the root of the problem.
And I guess that can be pretty unpleasant in a lot of cases. That's why it is easier for some people to continue living a certain way that is, whether it's promiscuous or overindulgent in terms of eating too much per meal or whatever it is, people want to live that way and then take a pill that will offset all of those problems that they've just given themselves. It doesn't work that way, though. That's not how it goes. It's a lot easier to try to take a pill than it is to make changes, but making changes and dealing with the cause of the problem is the only way to move forward.
And of course, so when you're looking at, say, the prescription drugs, one of the issues is the expense, very expensive. But there's another problem that comes from that as well. So instead of solving the original problem, now we're making more problems that are branching off. And this other problem, of course, is now addiction to these drugs. There's quite a few reports here. I'll just give you the titles of the reports. I think you'll get the gist. Research report on misuse of prescription drugs. Research report on prescription opioids. Drug facts, cough and cold medicine abuse, emerging trends, Zizerp and purple drink, which I guess is cough syrup that people drink, prescription stimulants abuse and health effects, prescription sedatives, sleeping pills, or anxiolytic, whatever that is, abuse. I can't even pronounce it. Prescription opioids abuse and health effects, over-the-counter cough cold medicines health effects. Naloxone, a medication designed to rapidly reverse opioid overdose. So people are getting addicted to the pills and abusing them. And then now there's more pills to help with the abuse of the pills. So you can see how this is just perpetuating.
And right. And those pills, of course, are supposed to make people feel good. And a lot of the time with some pills, what happens is you feel good when you take them, and then all of a sudden you start to feel worse than you did before if you're not using the pills regularly enough. And so it's like you're on a roller coaster where you're feeling great and then you're feeling horrible, and you have to just keep on taking the pills to get that high feeling again. People want to feel good, but would you rather be on the pill to feel good, or would you rather be just eating healthy and sleeping right and not having some sort of an addiction to always be feeding?
I think the difficulty for probably all of us is that, you know, you don't think a whole lot about it sometimes until you have to. And then it's, you know, then you're dealing with the problem there. So it's something to think about early. Mr. Armstrong makes that point in this coworker letter talking about cause and effect. He said, all this world's evils begin when humans, when human life begins, with children. Influences of the world around them, plus the invisible sway of Satan, causes varying degrees of selfishness and evil to develop as children grow into adults. And he brings out the point that when God's kingdom is set up, when Christ returns, it doesn't solve every problem immediately. You have to educate the young people as they're growing up. And so we have to stop and look at these problems today, say the health issues, and say, well, what are the children being taught about health today? Of course, if you look at reports, the percentage of children with obesity in the United States has more than tripled since the 1970s. You don't have to be told that. You just go out in public and you see it.
And what do you always see with the kids as well is just them staring at a screen the whole time. Even babies are now handed an iPad or a little phone so that they can quiet down and give their parents some peace. That's a pretty bad habit to start at such a young age when really they shouldn't be even having more than like, what is it, half an hour or an hour of screen time a day, and yet they get it for hours just to stay quiet and not be as much of an annoyance for the parents. They're starting young on the screens, and then that's their preferred luxury, I guess, behavior of choice. If they get a chance to spend their free time, they're going to choose the screen and not going outdoors and being curious and exploring the world like they used to do until pretty recently.
And it causes multiple problems. We probably don't know all of them yet, but potential for obesity, and then also mental issues. You know, there's a lot going on with that as well. But those the two factors there with the child obesity is lack of movement and diet, and you see it very often. I think probably all the listeners could remember have a similar experience of going somewhere in public and you see the parents and they're quite large and you see the kids and they're also the same and they're all kind of eating the same thing, doing the same thing. And, it's a habit. It's learned. It's learned behavior probably passed down from generation to generation. And in some cases, people just don't know, ignorant to the causes. In some cases, don't care. I don't know. But when you start out as a young person learning those bad habits, having those health conditions, it's going to cause a lot of problems really pretty early in life.
It's almost like society does make it difficult to be healthy because there is so much money to be made by treating the effects of sickness. I mean, just the fact that junk food is way cheaper than any healthy food. If you do have a big family, it's pretty tempting, I'm sure, to just feed the family on a burger instead of going and taking time to shop for greens and for everything else that is more expensive, but it's also more healthy.
And it's the junk food, I guess you'd call it. I mean, it's quick, it's accessible, it's packaged to look good, and it's chemically designed to taste good, at least on some level. And you want it, and they know that, and they market it to you. And there's some really interesting books out there that just talk about the food industry, and they're not oblivious to what they're doing. And a lot of cases, I don't think they eat their own food.
Right.
So it is interesting to look at that, but you do see the sort of this generational problem developing and these diseases developing.
America's pretty unique in that way as well, because our poor people don't necessarily look that poor because we have so many people in this country who are very much overweight. You don't have to be emaciated in this country if you're poor because you can go to McDonald's and get a burger for a dollar. So it's pretty easy to still pay for junky food even when poor.
Yeah, and there was even a report today, I think, that the hunger level in the U.S. is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
But as Mr. Armstrong wrote many, many years ago, there was already really a famine going on. There's an abundance of food, but there's a famine of quality food.
Yeah, he always said people in America are overfed but undernourished.
Yep.
So it just means we're stuffing our faces, but it's not with any of the right things.
This report here on childhood obesity says that, of course, there's immediate and long-term impacts on physical, social, and emotional health. So again, it's both the mental and the physical. Children with obesity are at higher risk of having chronic health conditions and diseases that impact physical health, such as asthma, sleep apnea, bone and joint problems, type 2 diabetes, and risk factors for heart disease. Children with obesity are bullied and teased more than their normal weight peers, which I guess would be understandable. 18 and are more likely to suffer from social isolation, depression, and lower self-esteem. So again, then you start getting into the mental health issues as well. In the long term, childhood obesity is also associated with having obesity as an adult, which is linked to serious conditions and diseases such as heart disease, type 2 diabetes, so on and so forth. So again, that gets to the point that Mr. Armstrong was talking about in that coworker letter. When you're dealing with cause and effect, you have to deal with the cause of problems, and you have to start when people are young. Start with the children as much as you can. And no matter where you are in life, you can always figure out the cause and work on it. But particularly when the next generation is coming up, they need to learn the cause that causes all these other problems to happen and not look so much at the effects. Look at the cause and solve that issue, and then you can really start to overcome some of those problems.
It is a matter of loving our children, because if we don't, we're going to be leading them into a lot of debilitating habits in terms of our health and, of course, every other area. But if just focusing on health, if we teach kids to sit around and stare at a screen or to just eat whatever they can get their hands on, just like Mr. Armstrong wrote, how adults are basically grown babies, where everything a baby touches, they put into their mouths, and we kind of do the same thing even as we get older. If we just instill those habits in our children, they're going to suffer for it. They're probably going to die early if they continue in that same route their entire lives. Our bodies can only handle so much abuse. So it is a matter of loving our children, not always doing what's pleasurable, but doing what is healthy and will make us have a more prosperous life.
Yeah, and a lot of, I think, when people start to investigate more of good health, a good healthy lifestyle, eating and exercise and those things, then it becomes enjoyable. It takes a while. It's probably not our first inclination to get out of bed and do something active. We'd probably rather lay there for a while. But as you get more active and you get doing those things, then they become quite enjoyable, and you really do like it. You know, if people learn how to cook well, they make amazing. You know, the food's amazing, and it's good for you. And then your palate begins to change, and you're not as interested in the fast food as much. it's out there. It's pulling at you every time you look at it.
It never really goes away.
No, I mean, even, you know, football season's coming up, right? And if you like to watch football, what's the first thing you think of after football? You think, what are we going to eat when we're watching football? Because nobody wants to sit down to a bowl of broccoli at that point. So everything's kind of geared towards the lifestyle that a lot of us probably have had or do have, and we're trying to come out of it somewhat. And everything points towards the unhealthy. But if we want to get rid of these chronic diseases and not get them in the first place, we've got to go the other direction.
Yeah, getting healthy is almost like a train pulling out from the station, because the wheels are creaking and groaning, and it's just a really slow start, but it just starts to build momentum, and then nothing can stop it if you really get into it. You develop the habit, you remember how sluggish you felt before getting healthy, and then once you're healthy, you never want to go back to how it used to be. You just keep on plugging along, and you get faster and faster going in the right direction.
Yeah, and then, of course, even you look at, say, people realizing in this country, that in the United States and a lot of the Western nations, that there's a problem with chronic diseases, there's a problem with obesity and so forth, and then you get people trying to solve it, but you get the extremes then. You know, the Biggest Loser television show or whatever, where the people go from being exceptionally large to somewhat more moderate, but they put them through, like, you know, army boot camp. And that's hard to sustain for the rest of your life. You look at what becomes of those people after the show. In a lot of cases, they go back to the way they were. It's really a sad thing. But again, you know, exercise is good, but even that extreme that they portray in those shows isn't sustainable. Probably in and of itself isn't a healthy lifestyle, because it's so over the top, and so, you know, it doesn't really solve the problem either.
Well, some of those contestants who lost a couple hundred pounds on The Biggest Loser end up going home and they work out 2 or 3 hours a day and still can't sustain what they were doing on that show. So it does show you, In regular life, we're not going to have 16 hours a day to devote to working out and to getting healthy in terms of physical exercise. But there are choices we can make every day that will gradually help us reduce our size and develop some right habits. It's just a matter of being balanced and being disciplined, which is extremely difficult today. It's not really all about just trying to knock out our problem in a week, because that's not realistic.
And that's right. Even when you look at, say, this topic of cause of problems, either dealing with the cause or dealing with the effect, even when I think people do kind of go back and say, well, I know the causes, I'm not active enough, I don't eat right, so I'm going to deal with that. Like you say, even that gets to be extreme, where it's like, well, I'm going to solve it all in a month. Yeah, it has to be a gradual and sustainable lifestyle change. You know, you can't break laws and then say, well, I'll be really strict and keep them for two months, and then it'll all be fine. It has to be a lifestyle. Dealing with the cause of something does have to be a continual process.
Yeah, and especially when you think of those contestants on that show again, in some cases, they ended up worse than they were before the show. So sometimes we have problems, we want to wipe them out, but if we do it so quickly, it's almost like it's impossible to sustain it, and it's almost worse for us than if we just did it gradually sometimes.
Yeah, there's a lot of great write-ups about just overall health, whether it be physical or mental. Dealing with the cause, it could be any problem. We just happened to pick the health topic today, but it could be, you know, financial. It could be anything. Dealing with the cause is the way to solve it. And there's a lot of good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about a variety of topics there. Also, PCOG.org has more Christian living-based write-ups that help with some of those issues that are out there. So no matter what the problem is, there's always a cause. That's the hopeful thing, is if you can find the cause and work on solving it, you can solve the problem. And it's a lot easier long-term than trying to deal with all these 500 effects that occur.
Yeah, and that's why this way of life is comforting in a way, because we always know that there's a set of laws, and if we keep them, we'll be happy. If we don't, we won't. It's a matter of figuring out which law was broken and getting back to the root of it. We at least have absolute truth, and we know that there is a cause for every effect. We just have to find that cause. Sometimes it takes work to find the cause, but once we find it, we do know what to do about it.
Yeah, so go back to the source for those answers, which is the Bible, and you can find a lot of great info at thetrumpet.com about those topics. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us, myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Appreciate you spending some time with us, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.